they've set a very high standard for these talks, saying that they won't be satisfied with most of the likely outcomes.
U.S.-China trade talks begin in Beijing. It's Tuesday, January 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us. Follow us as well on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Australia closes detention centers. Election unrest in Bangladesh. Changing climate warms Asia and the world. Increased interest in space. New lawmakers in Washington. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S.-China trade talks opened Monday in Beijing with negotiators for the world's two biggest economies trying to resolve tariff disputes that have roiled world markets in recent weeks. U.S. Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross told CNBC the United States and China are likely to reach a settlement over the immediate trade issues, but that agreement on thornier disputes involving structural economic issues between the two countries could prove more difficult. For more, VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Phil Levy, a senior fellow in the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and he teaches in the strategy department at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. From 2003 to 2006, he served as senior economist for trade for George W. Bush's Council on Economic Advisers.
I think it's very likely that we get to a situation where both the Chinese and the Trump administration want to make a deal. I think they're going to have some difficulty pulling it off, exactly because they've made a number of deals in the past. They've proven insufficient because the Trump administration said it was not satisfied, and they've set a very high standard for these talks, saying that they won't be satisfied with most of the likely outcomes.
If there are winners and losers in this whole thing, you know, maybe you're going to say everybody's a loser, but now at least on the surface, it looks like the Chinese economy is taking more lumps than the United States. Do you agree with that?
I think the Chinese economy is having some serious difficulties. That's in part because of some of the trade actions the U.S. took, but they have a number of other things going on, such as the withdrawal of stimulus. So they are having some economic difficulties. They are eager to strike a deal, but the U.S. is also feeling the pain, particularly in, say, the agricultural sector with retaliation, but also all of the businesses that used, for example, imports and inputs from China.
For those who have not really kept up with this story throughout Asia and throughout the world, why has this developed? Why is there a trade war?
The Trump administration conducted an investigation into Chinese intellectual property practices, and they found that China's aggressive approach to intellectual property had cost the U.S. $50 billion a year. And so they decided that rather than only going through the World Trade Organization, they would directly impose tariffs on $50 billion of imports from China. When China responded to that action, the U.S. escalated to make that $250 billion total, and China partially responded to that. So that's how we got to this point.
Has this worked for the United States?
No, I don't think there's any sign that it's worked. It has not gotten China to change its practices. The Trump administration would say that China's eager to do a deal, but they were eager to do a deal from the day President Trump came into office, and they have not been able to resolve anything yet, and meanwhile, American consumers have been paying those tariffs and American businesses that use import inputs, and you've had a lot of farms suffer because they've lost a major market.
The chief issue was technology and how China was stealing U.S. technology and technology of other nations. What's the status of that right now as far as reaching some kind of agreement?
It's hard to know exactly what they've agreed in these talks. It's a very difficult issue because most companies will argue that the rules that China has on its books are not bad, that the real problem has been how China enforces those rules. And so China will claim, for example, that there is no forced expropriation of intellectual property, that these are just simply deals that Western companies choose to do to get access. That is a view that's seriously disputed by certainly the U.S. government, but also a lot of U.S. companies. What this means is simply agreeing that it's a bad idea to steal intellectual property doesn't get you very far. What you need is a deeper agreement about how one engages in enforcement, and that's going to be tough.
Tough because the Chinese won't move?
Tough because it's getting into areas that have traditionally been things that, you know, nations do for themselves. President Trump makes a very emphatic point about sovereignty and how each nation gets to set its own rules, and there's a certain extent to which the Chinese agree with him. They think they ought to set their own rules. And it's one thing when one's talking about sort of border barriers or explicit practices. It's another when you're talking about the whole gamut of enforcement and domestic practices.
There is a March deadline for the tariffs to go into effect. Do you expect anything that would extend the so-called truce that's now underway?
I think it's going to be a very difficult choice for this administration, and it might bear some resemblance to what we saw with the government shutdown, where initially they had an agreement, you know, shortly before Christmas to solve all this, and there was a bit of an uproar from the more fervent supporters of President Trump, and they had to back away. I could easily see something similar happening with China, where they've wanted to strike a deal all along. The Trump administration may decide they've gotten the best they could. The problem was they raised expectations by saying that they needed fundamental change and not promises, and they're not going to get that by early March.
Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and teaches in the strategy department at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. The United States and China open trade talks to ease tensions. In China, Wright's lawyer likely to be disbarred for defending client. Saudi woman fleeing family under UN care in Thailand. Tesla breaks ground on Shanghai factory. How a dead pig is further soiling China-Taiwan relations. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Two of Australia's nine high-security immigration detention centers are being closed in what the government says is a vindication of its tough border protection policies. Ministers say the facilities are no longer needed because they have stopped asylum seekers who often risk their lives on unseaworthy vessels from trying to reach Australia by sea. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia's network of detention centres has a troubled history, including escapes and hunger strikes.
That's what's going on now in detention centre. They smashed the whole place, they burned it down. That's Yongah Hall detention centre.
In September last year, riots broke out at an immigration facility 95 kilometres east of Perth after a suicide attempt by a detainee. However, the government is closing a high-security centre in Melbourne, while another in Sydney will shut later this year. The centre-right government says the closures are a milestone in its efforts to protect Australia's borders, unlike the opposition Labour Party when it was last in power. Immigration Minister David Coleman.
These immigration detention centres have been closed and are able to be closed because this government has got Australia's borders under control. Labor opened 17 detention centres. We've closed 19.
But Nosheen Mogadam from the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre insists the government is being deceptive by simply transferring detainees and increasing capacity at other facilities.
It seems as though people will be shuffled along to other detention centres. It's not solving any problems.
Since 2013, the Australian Navy has been ordered to turn back migrant boats, a policy that critics say is illegal under international law. Asylum seekers arriving by sea have also been warned that they'll never be allowed to settle in Australia. About 1,250 detainees are currently held in Australia's mainland immigration camps. Most are from Iran, New Zealand and Vietnam. In 2013, there were 10,000 detainees. Several hundred migrants remain in an offshore camp funded by Canberra on the Pacific island of Nauru. The mandatory detention of asylum seekers without valid visas was introduced in Australia in 1992 in response to a wave of boat arrivals from Southeast Asia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Currently in Asia, Thai authorities say a young Saudi woman who was stopped in Thailand as she tried to flee to Australia to seek asylum has left the Bangkok airport and is under the care of the UN Refugee Agency. The 18-year-old fled from Kuwait during a family vacation and will not be forcibly sent back to Saudi Arabia. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today. The UN Human Rights Office is calling on Bangladeshi authorities to clamp down on party sympathizers who are allegedly behind violent, deadly attacks against political opponents protesting the results of the country's recent parliamentary elections. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the agency's headquarters in Geneva.
The UN agency expresses deep concern about the violent crackdown against members of Bangladesh's political opposition before, during, and after the parliamentary elections on December 30th. The opposition, which claims the ruling Awami League's landslide victory was rigged, has taken to the streets in protest. The UN Human Rights Office says it has credible reports of fatalities, numerous injuries, and wide-scale intimidation, including the arbitrary arrests, harassment, and disappearances of government opponents and minorities. It says reports indicate repressive measures are being disproportionately carried out by ruling party activists, including law enforcement officers. The agency spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, says media professionals, human rights defenders, the political opposition, and government critics are being restrained from speaking out. She tells VOA Bangladesh's institutions, including the Election Commission and National Human Rights Commission, reportedly are not sufficiently impartial.
We are stressing that it is very important for means of redress, as you suggest, legal means of redress, institutional means of redress, to be made available to the people in order to express their grievances and to avoid a further resort to violence.
The UN agency is urging the authorities to carry out a prompt, independent investigation into all alleged acts of violence and other human rights violations related to the elections. It says those responsible for abuses must be held accountable, regardless of political affiliation. The agency warns the space for human rights defenders and other members of Bangladesh's civil society is shrinking. It says care must be taken to protect their right to freedoms of expression, peaceful assembly, and association. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, the chilling realities of a warming climate. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news from VOA Asia. U.S.-China trade talks opened Monday in Beijing with negotiators for the world's two biggest economies trying to resolve tariff disputes that have roiled the world markets in recent weeks. U.S. and Chinese officials expressed optimism before the two-day talks. We're always optimistic. You'll enjoy your visit to VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the five hottest years on record have all taken place this decade, and it looks like 2018 will join their ranks. The year showcased the hazards of climate change while showing how far the world is from confronting it. VOA's Steve Barragona looks back on a year of climate catastrophes and controversies likely to extend into 2019.
In November, California's deadliest wildfire on record killed 88 people, a grim example of consequences on a warming planet. The state's fires are getting worse, says former wildfire fighting chief Ken Pimlott.
Things are changing. The folks can say what they want to say, but when firefighters are living climate change, it's staring them in the face every day.
In September, Hurricane Florence's record-breaking rains caused massive flooding in North Carolina. Fire at one extreme, water at the other, like the difference between where the world is headed and where it needs to be. UN scientists issued a sobering report ahead of December's climate talks in Poland. Ho-Sung Lee chaired the panel.
It shows that the window to limit warming to 1.5 degree is narrow, that it would require a net global emissions of carbon dioxide to fall by about 45% by 2030. Every year matters.
But this year, emissions rose by an estimated 2.7%, the biggest jump since 2011. U.S. government scientists published an equally stark report in November on the impacts of climate change on the nation. President Donald Trump told VOA that cutting emissions would be too expensive.
When you look at China and when you look at other countries where they have very, you know, foul air, they have not good air, we're going to be clean, but they're not, and it costs a lot of money.
But Trump's efforts to loosen regulations on producing and burning fossil fuels have met with mixed results so far, says the Natural Resources Defense Council's Jake Schmidt.
The good news is that a number of those are being held up in court. The progress is a bit slower in terms of unwinding them, but clearly everything that's been on the climate action agenda for the last couple of years, the Trump administration is trying to undo.
Trump's Republican Party lost control of the House of Representatives in the midterm elections. That will mean more pushback from Democrats on climate and much more in 2019. Meanwhile, Trump's hostility toward climate science did not stop UN negotiators from reaching a deal in December on a rulebook for carrying out the Paris Climate Agreement. Critics say it does not go nearly far enough. Step forward carefully, experts warn. Raising fuel taxes to fight climate change helped bring yellow vest protesters to the streets in France. Who will pay the cost of climate action as the bill for past inaction comes due? It's a question for 2019 and beyond. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. Cambodia marks 40 years since the fall of the Khmer Rouge regime, with thousands lining the streets of Phnom Penh to participate in celebrations. The Khmer Rouge, a hardline communist command, terrorized the Southeast Asian country from 1975 to 1979, killing as many as 3 million people. Find your online safe haven at VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, this year marks the 50th anniversary of mankind's first steps on the moon. So it's fitting there are a number of exciting projects pushing us back into space. VOA's Kevin Enix looks ahead to some of 2019's biggest stories in space.
These images made history on New Year's Day as NASA received pictures of Ultima Thule, the farthest object ever investigated by humans, an astounding 6.5 billion kilometers away in the Kuiper Belt at the outer edge of our solar system.
And it's okay to laugh, but it's better than the one we had yesterday. There it is. Meet Ultima.
The images, which will get better as time goes by, are courtesy of the New Horizons spacecraft. The music from participating scientist, astrophysicist, and Queen guitarist Brian May.
It totally inspired me, and I'm getting to know the people who work in all the different departments of this thing.
But a flight through the Kuiper Belt is not all we can expect. A public-private partnership between NASA, Boeing, and SpaceX is scheduled to do a manned test flight in April with the Crew Dragon spacecraft that could one day open the way for space tourism.
Together, we're delivering on the critical task of providing a capability to fly our crews on a U.S.-built rocket and spacecraft from U.S. soil on Florida's Space Coast to the International Space Station, so we no longer have to rely on our Russian partners to get our crews to space.
Virgin Galactic is also looking to compete in the space tourism business. Its manned space vehicle is in the final stages of testing this year.
I will then go up, and then after I've been up, paying passengers who want to become astronauts will follow. And I hope that in the years to come, many people watching this program will go to space and become astronauts.
This year also marks some new attempts to return to the moon. The Israelis are expected to launch a washing machine-sized probe to our nearest neighbor in February. India and China also have probes scheduled to land on the moon in the coming months.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
50 years after we first walked on the moon, 2019 may be remembered as the year we made real progress going farther, faster, and more permanently beyond Earth. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
A new U.S. Congress has started work here in Washington with an historic class of new legislators, many without prior political experience. The racially diverse class has already set some records. It includes the most women elected to Congress, the first Native American and Muslim woman, the first U.S. Army Special Forces Green Beret, and the youngest and oldest women legislators elected as new representatives. Voice of America is taking you behind the scenes to see the challenges these lawmakers will face in their first year. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti goes up to Capitol Hill to introduce us to two new U.S. representatives who are climbing the hill.
Right here, everyone.
Pete Stauber, Republican, professional hockey player, police commander, dad of four. He flipped his Minnesota district from Democrat to Republican. Katie Porter, Democrat. Tenured California law professor, graduate of Harvard and Yale, single mom of three. With no political experience, she unseated an incumbent Republican. Both are freshman legislators, new to the U.S. Congress. VOA is following them for their entire first year in what we call climbing the hill, as in Capitol Hill, where U.S. representatives and senators make this country's laws.
Stauber.
Historically, these seats were mostly filled by white men. But November's election results made the 116th Congress the most diverse in history. Katie Porter is among the largest percentage of women to be elected, at nearly 24%.
My very first issue that I want to work on is campaign finance reform. There's a bill that we're hoping to introduce as H.R. 1, the first bill that the House takes up.
And for Stauber?
The first bill would be about the jobs and the economy to keep this pro-growth, pro-jobs agenda going.
There's only 10 channels?
Yeah.
That's 10 more than you have at home.
Porter's three children will remain in California until the end of the school year, when they may move to the nation's capital. Stauber's children will stay in Minnesota with his wife, Jody. While in Washington, Stauber will share a townhouse with three other congressmen.
My room is it's about 10 by 12, and you got a bunk bed for family.
These freshmen know it will be a tough year. With Democrats controlling the House of Representatives, Pete Stauber knows that President Donald Trump, the man who campaigned for him, will be the target of investigations into Russian meddling and other matters.
I can't stop them from doing that, if that's the majority's will. But I don't think the American people, I don't think it's American people's will.
Up until this point, life for these freshmen has been a blur.
Ms. Porter drew number five.
The size and location of a Capitol Hill office depends on the lottery number pulled.
The thing I'm most excited about is the member's office, which is right here. I'm going to paint a bright blue color.
And she did.
And this color was called Old Glory.
The election was nearly 2 months ago.
Look at you, you're official.
And it's still taking a while to sink in.
The title of congressman is kind of surreal, you know, for me.
People ask me, who are you? I say, I'm a law professor, and I'm a consumer advocate, and I'm a mom, and this is an additional identity that I have to think about. So it is a change.
We'll see how they adjust to their new roles as we check in with them in a few months. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News on Capitol Hill.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, of course on our website at voanews.com, and you can download our program from many different sites, including iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also hear us on the radio, Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. Our thanks go to Director Tracy Carter and Engineer Aydin Utku, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a nice day ahead.